I was surprised by, like I mentioned it before, and we seem to have got over it, thank goodness. But this view that, oh, well, you know, we're not going to bother with helping the families because it's their fault anyway.
Yes.
That's, you know, that there was some of that around. And also the view that if you're an affected other, oh, you don't deserve help for yourself. You know, that a lot of people just don't realise that there isn't much support out there. Mm. But they just don't realise that it exists at all, or even, and that they're worthy of getting that support, that they need it too. You just don't see that often. We try and get people to understand that to be able to be strong and to be supportive, if you set boundaries, if you can deal with conflict, you're actually being supportive, but you need support for yourself.
Yeah.
You need that help yourself, or you're not going to be able to cope with it.
Yeah.
And that's what we try and put across.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to This Is Powerful with me, Paul Scholfor. In this podcast, I will speak to some incredible people about mindset, mental health, addiction, and recovery. And I'll share my own story throughout these conversations. We are well and truly in season 5 of the show, and we're doing a mini series focused on youth and addiction. We speak to some really inspirational young people about how they personally have been affected by addiction and recovery, and some who have been surrounded by the addiction of others as a young person. We also speak with professionals who are working in the addiction and recovery youth sector. There'll be a new episode every Thursday. In these episodes, we will be talking about drug and alcohol misuse, suicide, sexual abuse, and some other heavy topics. So please take care when listening. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to This Is Powerful. Behind the scenes of many addiction treatment support organizations are devoted souls who give their lives and careers in aid of helping families who are struggling with the addiction of a loved one. Today's guest talks about overcoming shame, setting firm boundaries, and the rehab myth within a family setting. Vivian Evans is the chief executive of ADFAM, the national organization for children and families affected by someone else's substance misuse. ADFAM advocates for support for these family members, trains practitioners to work with them, and provides support services. Vivian has a long history of leadership roles within the public and charity sectors. She has a background in drug and alcohol education and prevention within young people and families. And she specializes in substance misuse policy and practice. Hi, Vivian. Thank you for coming on to This Is Powerful.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Much appreciated. I said you had a long journey, but you said it was a short journey.
Relatively short.
You've done lots and lots of work. You have a big history. You started at ADFAM in 2001, is that correct? Roughly.
If you say so, yes. Yeah. It's a long time ago. I've been there a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What got you interested in working in ADFAM? And probably the best question for our audience is, what is ADFAM?
Okay, well, if I start with that, shall I?
Yeah.
Yeah, ADFAM is the national organisation. We're a charity set up in 1984 by the mother of a heroin user. And she couldn't find any help, but she was really distressed. She couldn't find any help at all for herself. So she set up ADFAM. And ADFAM has been through various iterations since then. There was a time when we had quite a lot of work in prisons, supporting prisoners' families who were incarcerated because of drug problems. And we're now a national organisation. And we work in three areas. We do a lot of influencing and campaigning work, a lot of surveys, a lot of research, trying to raise awareness of the issues that face anyone affected by somebody else's substance use.
And it was Simone who started it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've never met her, actually. This was way after my, way before my time. But yes, it was.
So was it because at the time, I believe she had two sons, right? And one...
And one was one had a problem with heroin, yeah.
And she couldn't find any help or stuff for her personally as a mother to correct. Someone that was yeah. using substances.
And that is what we do, because we recognise that it isn't just the user who's affected. There are yeah. others that are affected, and that's where we focus our work. The second area we work in is offering training to practitioners, frontline practitioners. And thirdly, we run services, AdFam at Home, mm-hmm. which is online, up to 6 one-to-one sessions of structured support for whoever. It might be a mother, it might be, usually it's often women, actually. Mm. it might be an aunt, uncle, grandparent. We do some work with kin carers, and they are usually grandparents who are looking after a child, their grandchild, because their own parents have got drug or alcohol problems.
Yeah.
But you're quite right. AdFam was set up by someone with lived experience.
Yeah.
And we try and stick to that principle in everything we do. About 70% of our trustees have lived experience.
Yeah.
Some of our team, although it's not, you know, you don't have to have that to get a job with us, put it that way. Mm. But we involve people with lived experience all the time in everything we do.
I believe about lived experience. We'll jump back into some of the things in detail. Mm-hmm. having lived experience myself sure. on both sides of the coin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My personal view is that someone who's doing one-on-one work or group work, mm-hmm. you have a kind of special antenna and a roadmap to help them. What's your experience with your practitioners in that area?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's what would I say? I'd say you don't have to have lived experience to, as long as you have, as I hope I have, an understanding, an empathy with the issues and of what people with lived experience face. Because what I've learned is everybody's experience is different, and you can't blueprint them. You have to listen to everybody's experience. I mean, for example, the other week we have a group of lived experience advisory group that advises us on, you know, these are the issues. Why don't you look at this? Why don't you focus on this at AdFam? And there was someone who talked about the financial pressures of supporting her daughter who's got an alcohol problem. And so as a result of that, we're going to do some, you know, a survey and do a report on experience, financial pressures on family members supporting someone.
It's such a great thing because it's really important because what seems to get missed is we put people into treatment through Stride Foundation, and it is, what does the wife do, what does the mother or father do, what do the kids do, and more importantly, it's quite, I'd love to talk to you about this, is that that's great to get the main person with the problem or issue sorted out, but how do you guide the family after? Because if someone's gone into treatment, they've come from alcohol or drug misuse, say it's a father, they come in and they come out a different person.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does a child how does a child deal with that? Because they're, before, they probably felt betrayed, lost, put aside. There's loads of different things. Yeah. And then a parent comes back in as
you've
if nothing's
really,
happened.
Really, really, really good point.
Yeah.
And that's where families need, because you're quite right, families are disrupted. Relationships suffer, there's a lot of stress, a lot of conflict. And one of the things that we try to do with our one-to-one sessions, help families to come back together, to reconnect. And I think you're quite absolutely right. Sometimes that's really difficult for the children because the dynamic of the family has totally changed. So to build that up again is something that, you know, we help families to do. And even though we work with the family member, not with the user, having said that, there are benefits to the user if the family member is involved. And so often, you know, what happens is in the treatment services, family members can help somebody to get into treatment to start with, help them in their recovery. A lot of the work that we've done, we've found, did a big survey last year, last year that 75%, over 75% of the over 100 people who responded said that they couldn't have done, couldn't sustain their recovery without their family member helping them. And that's in practical ways and emotional ways. Because, you know, there's so many other, I'm rambling on a bit, so many other issues associated with substance use. It's not just substance use.
Well, it's the fabric, isn't it, that people don't...
Yeah.
It would be brushed aside because the main thing, the paramount thing is the using, but...
Yeah.
For children, it is the neglect.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's the sleepless nights.
Absolutely.
Fear of who's coming through the door.
Yeah. And what... we have someone who works with King Carers. And what she says is so often the children are really, really traumatised.
Yeah.
Seriously traumatised. And they need specialist help for themselves. But no, you're absolutely, you're quite right. It's a very complex, it's a complex picture. And what we try to do with our services at ADFAM is give the affected other, I don't really like the phrase, but it's in common parlance now, to give them the... I guess the emotional framework to work with, but also, you know, to help them to come to terms with what's going on, to understand addiction. I mean, so many people will say, I just want to know what it's all about. I just want to understand what it means, you know? And I suppose,
it's not,
you know,
a one-sentence answer.
Yeah, no, there isn't. And I suppose, you know, once you work in it or have experienced it, you know exactly what it means. But a lot of people don't and want to know that. So we try and give them some information, help them deal with conflict, but also build the family back together again, as you so rightly say. That's particularly important for everybody, for children. And to get some coping mechanisms for themselves, because it's so often, I think that's the other thing that happens, you know, that I've come across, not so much now, but when I first went to ADFAM, there was this view that, oh, well, if there's a young person who's using, it's the parents' fault. They've come from a poor background. They've come from, you know, this, that and the other. Why didn't the parents do something about it? And that is just, I mean, you know.
It's a very Victorian mindset.
Indeed. It's, you know, no, it's not. And it's not it's not people who live, who are disadvantaged. You know, no end of people from very good backgrounds and good jobs, and you know this
addiction, that it doesn't choose one,
it doesn't
set of
choose
people.
No, and neither does it choose. I remember somebody saying to me once, you don't get up one morning and think, oh, I'm gonna start you I'm gonna start being a dependent alcohol user or a drug user. You don't, that doesn't happen. And I think that's often the bit that gets forgotten, is that it is such a complex issue.
Well, it's still, if you speak to people who have no experience whatsoever, it's usually, they're weak-willed.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Absolutely.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I actually thought that when I grew up, that it was an issue like that. But now I've come to find that it's completely not at all.
Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why. And it's associated with mental ill health often, you know, and there needs to be much, you know, joined up approaches to treatment, so all those issues are taken care of.
What do you do with the surveys that you do? Because it's quite a big thing to do the survey. And so, for example, with the money for the parent of the girl, what would come from the survey?
Our surveys?
Yeah.
Well, we write them up. And we present them, we put them on our social media. We are involved with part of a lot of networks, partnerships, so we make sure that we get the message out there. I'd love us to be able to do more with general public media, which I'm really pleased to be here today, I have to say, so thank you. It's quite, because it's, and then we would present our reports to civil servants. We'd write to MPs and do a lot of influencing work in that way.
Yeah.
But getting out there to the general public is a challenge quite often because, I mean, you and I have mentioned this before, the stigma that's associated with our cause and our beneficiaries is huge, and we've got to get through that barrier. I always say, you know, 10 years ago, when I first worked in health education many, many years ago, we used to do a lot of work to encouraging women to have mammograms and to self-examine. And it was such a, you know, I remember going to various factories in Leicestershire in the lunch hour to talk about this. And, you know, we were sort of behind closed doors. It was harsh. And now, you know, we can talk about cancer. We can talk about breast cancer. And the same as we can talk about mental health, because that was stigmatized. It was not spoken about. You didn't say, you know, I feel depressed or I've got anxiety problems. And I, you know, my ambition is still for anyone affected for the same, you know, for that, for there to be that awareness of substance use and its effect on others.
Where does your drive come from?
Oh,
because it's a specific area.
Yeah, I suppose I've always wanted to work with, wanted to work to do something to try and help people, however minimal that might be. I mean, it sounds very grandiose, but I've always wanted to do that. And I think I've, well, I've certainly given that to my daughter. That's always been, you know, I didn't want to ever work in anything other than the public sector or charity sector, and to be able to try and do something to help people. And that's my ambition. That's where I came
grandiose,
from.
Grandiose, it's quite generous, actually, because we are in a selfish society.
Yeah, well, we are indeed. Yeah,
so
we are.
It's hard, but it's interesting, my experience, because I lived in America for on and off for 25 years.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the conversation there is different than it is here.
Yeah, yeah.
In the sense of, you'll see advertising for rehabs or programs like AA or other programs, and on TV programs they talk about it a lot. It's a subject which is talked about, and it's not really talked about over here.
Yeah.
But it is changing.
Yeah, yeah.
What have you noticed in the long period that you've worked in this sector that has changed?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is more recognition. I think you're absolutely right. But there's still that stigma, huge amount of stigma, which is preventing open talk. I think it's a lot, you know, we're a lot more open about drug and alcohol use than we are, dependent use than we ever were. But it's still there. Mm. But I have noticed a slow change, perhaps not as rapid as I like. I think there is more recognition. And there's certainly, I think, more recognition of the needs of affected others, that they need support in their own right. I mean, there's still, you know, family support workers who work in treatment services, but their role is often quite limited. Mm. They might just give the family member, a bit of information, or, you know, something, or refer them to AA or Al-Anon or whatever. There's still that stigma there, and until we can really, really break through that barrier, things aren't going to change that much.
What do you think is that barrier? Do you think that's sort of government down, or do you how could that be eroded away, do you think?
I think more awareness, and more giving people who've got lived experience, to give them a chance to speak out. I mean, we have a carol concert every year at St. Bride's Church in on Fleet Street, and we have a competition for family members to write a poem or piece of prose about their experience, and then we have guests who will give them read out the poems and the prizes and whatever. And I always say, thank you for being brave enough to speak out. Thank you for being brave enough to speak out. And until we really get that to the level that mental health is now, we're not, you know, that's the challenge. That's the barrier. That's the breakthrough point, is when we can get that to happen.
That's literally what we're doing here on this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great.
We are getting our numbers up, which is great. But it's a challenge, because we joked briefly before about if you have a donkey charity, it's easy to raise money.
Indeed.
But I think if people really understand what happens to family members or someone supporting, be it a child or a parent, it's difficult because there is the shame attached.
Absolutely.
And how do you guys help families to get over the idea of shame?
Well, when I think with a lot of our work, with our, I mentioned our surveys, our reports, the work that we do to try and get our voice heard across all sorts of media. And I think also raising that awareness, getting a general understanding across the public that this can happen to anyone, that it shouldn't be shameful, that people need help and support. And this isn't something that needs to be hidden away, because if you hide something away, then it does become shameful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So if you can bring it out into the open, talk about it more openly. That's my wish, is that, I mean, that's why I'm so pleased to be here today, that, you know, we can talk about these issues openly and say there is no shame in it. I mean, I think the change in language around addiction is very helpful. I mean, now, you know, we don't use the word addict because that is stigmatizing. And we use the term dependency.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to put it in that sort of overall health context, that this is a dependency, as other things, you know, you may be dependent on all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it kind of, to sort of, perhaps normalize isn't the word, but you know what I mean, to sort of put it in a different context.
Yeah.
So it's not over there, hidden away. Let's talk about it. Let's be honest about it. And I think using, you know, doing a lot of work in our sector on language, and trying to, there's a network called the Anti-Stigma Network, trying to work to break down the barriers that we've been talking
about.
Is
that just in the area of addiction and alcoholism that they work?
Sorry?
The Anti-Stigma.
The Anti-Stigma Network is all sorts of, all the organisations in the drug and alcohol sector.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, working towards doing, getting the message out there as much as we can.
See, I have never heard of them.
Oh, well, you have now, so.
See, this is why talking's important.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go.
I'd like to see your black book. I bet it's full of I bet there's lots of connections there.
Oh,
we can
I
have.
Know where all the bodies are buried. They probably say the same about me.
on that subject, what is AFA? Can you tell us what that is?
The Alcohol and Families Alliance.
Yeah.
Right. Well, about 10 years ago now, maybe longer, time flies. There was an organisation then called Alcohol Concern, and I did work there 20 odd years ago when I first came to London. And the chief executive of Alcohol Concern at the time, we were good pals. And one day we agreed, why don't we set up an alliance of all the organisations, not just in drug and alcohol sector, but across the sector, you know, social work, health.
Yeah.
Criminal justice, to bring together organisations that were keen on and wanted to campaign to raise awareness of the needs of families affected by alcohol. So that's what we did, and what we do, we have forum meetings. We try and, you know, bring speakers in, and we undertake some research. And at the moment, what we're doing is looking at kinship care and the issues around, you know, parental substance misuse.
Yeah.
And how often kin carers, the majority of kin carers, often grandparents, not always, could be aunts, uncles, are looking after children because their own, because of parental substance use.
Yeah.
And it's often not referred to. So we're trying to do some awareness raising around there with the Alcohol and Families Alliance. And we've got a lot of support from the Kin Care Ambassador, the government Kin Care Ambassador, who I think has lived it. I'm not sure. But anyway, she's given us a lot of a lot of support. So once we've produced our, we're doing some research at the moment, talking to King Carers about their experiences, what the challenges are, and then we'll, I say we as my colleagues, we'll write up a report and again, try and, you know, put that in front of as many, anybody who'll listen, put it that way, you know. Try and get
for
it
those who wouldn't know, what's a kin carer?
It's somebody who's in the family who is looking after a child because their own parents can't.
Yeah.
And that could be because of serious illness, accident, bereavement, mental health, or drug and alcohol addiction.
It must be so difficult to be a grandparent looking after your grandchild when your child has problems. The dynamics must be incredibly strained.
Yes, because where's your loyalty?
Yeah.
And you think, goodness, this is what a lot of kin carers say, I failed as a parent because this is what my son or daughter is doing.
Mm.
And often the, you know, again, the shame, disruption of the family, children are often severely traumatised. So it's a tricky one, but, you know, do what we can.
yeah, that's incredible. Hi, it's Paul here. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and to say if you've heard something on the show that's moved you, please follow, rate, or review the show, and it'd be amazing if you could share it. Now back to the show. Gosh, if you are someone in that position, say if you're a parent or a grandparent and your child it does have substance misuse and it's quite bad, and they've never reached out, where could they go? And what kind? What would you say they could do?
Well, I mean, I'm about to say this, aren't I? I mean, we do have a service called AdFam at Home, and originally we set it up COVID lockdown. You know, it was the ideal. That's what you had to do, didn't you? You had to sort of change direction with the way you were, you know, services and whatever. And we had lottery funding, which ran out a couple of years ago. So we can only now offer the AdFam at Home service, which I'll say a bit more about in a minute, to those local areas that have commissioned us to deliver it, and to other particular groups where we have, you know, we managed to get some funding. But funding for our work is... Getting it is a challenge.
Yeah.
Oh, I could go on about that for a long time. Trying to bring in money from trusts and foundations. I mean, we've got some great help from some of them, from those who recognise that this is a key issue and understand the cause. But it can be, it's a challenge for everybody in our sector, actually, in the charity sector at the moment, bringing money and the donations are down, and it's a big challenge.
It's a strain for everyone I talk to across the board.
Yeah, but I don't. Where was I?
So you
could go to AdFam at Home, but you can pay for it if you could pay for it.
Oh, okay.
It's available on a fee on a pay as you go basis.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but that's good to know. Yeah. So they can find you basically on our AdFam website.
On our website, And I say, you know, I would say this, wouldn't I? So forgive me, but it's gold standard.
This is about pimping ourselves out, so don't worry.
But I think it's gold standard because everybody who apply, you know, fills in the form, they get an initial talk an initial with one of our family support workers, and to make sure that they can do this on Zoom or Teams or on the phone if that's not possible, but that they're safe, you know, that they're not going to be sitting in a room and somebody's going to come in and, because, you know, domestic abuse is
exactly.
And then at the end of the 6 weeks, that six one-to-one sessions that are offered, if they need further help, they could be referred to one of our counsellors, so they get more intense counselling. And or if they want to and it's okay and safe for them, a peer support group, which is facilitated.
Ah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Mm. And there's the peer support online as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Initially, I thought was the bad thing about the lockdowns, but actually,
been
such a bonus because you can reach people where you wouldn't have reached before.
Yeah, I know. I mean, most of the meetings, I don't like you, but most of the meetings I go to are online.
Yeah.
These days, you know, it's okay. I mean, sometimes, you know,
saves you getting completely dressed up.
It saves and you miss the gossip, but still. But no, it's really. I think it's our service. I think it's really helped because we were talking about stigma and shame, and you get over that if you're offering an online service,
yeah.
And also, you know, a lot of people live in remote areas. And we'll say, oh, I don't want to go to a group that's, you know, everybody knows me because everybody knows me. And again, coming back to stigma and shame. But a lot of people living in, you know, a village in wherever, you know, wouldn't want other people to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And this is why we celebrate at AdFam anybody who feels that they can speak out about what happened to them.
It's a brave thing to do.
It is a brave thing to do.
Because
it is a brave
thing to you. Culturally as well.
Yeah.
We are culturally as well sort of guided to protect our siblings, our family, the reputation of the family. So there's a lot of quiet suffering goes on, isn't there?
Well, there is, you know, absolutely. I mean, I've come across so many people who that is exactly the scenario. That's exactly what's going on. You know, the shame and it's the emotional stress and the rows and the family disruption and the relationship disruption as well, that is critical. And it's socially, you know, what do you do at Christmas, for example, if everybody's going to have a drink and you think, oh goodness, you know, what's going to happen to him or her? I mentioned earlier the financial impact too, which we often don't think. Somebody who spoke to us, I think I mentioned the other week, who said, I'm just paying out for my daughter's vodka. You know, and also, you know, there's another thing that we forget, I think, is the link with the criminal justice system, because, you know, families have spoken to me about being absolutely petrified of somebody, if they've got someone in the family who's using illegal drugs, that they'll be the knock on the door from the dealer who wants the money.
Yeah,
so they're paying out for that. And I remember someone, a mother, who'd got two children, and about the grown-up children, and one of them was getting married, the one who wasn't the drug user. And he said to his mum, oh, mum, he said, are you going to give me for my wedding, are you going to give me all the thousands of pounds for my wedding present, all the thousands that you spent on my brother's addiction?
Mm.
You know? So it's... It causes so many problems that are often not spoken about.
There was a young guy I know that started to get into trouble. And his drug dealer actually hijacked his apartment and moved in.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had to sleep on the couch for a while. Yeah, and then the family found out about it. And fortunately, they were quite a strong characters and managed to get him out, but that can go on for a long time.
Sure.
When you started to work at AdFam, were you surprised in any way at because you was doing cancer before, right? Wasn't you going around doing talks, you said, about cancer?
That was when I worked in Leicestershire in the local authority, the health authority. And then I went to work for an organisation that we did a lot of. You were talking earlier about going into schools, and we did a lot of work with drug and alcohol education in schools, teaching teachers about the curriculum. And where were we?
When you went to FM, was there any sort of surprises of the amount?
I was surprised by, like I mentioned it before, and we seem to have got over it, thank goodness. But this view that, you know, we're not going to bother with helping the families because it's their fault anyway.
Yes.
That's, you know, that there was some of that around. I wasn't really surprised. I think what I learned was I learned so much about what people were going through, you know, the issues that they were facing, and some of them, particularly I'd say the mothers, you know, their determination to. There's often this view that if only my son, daughter, whoever, could get into rehab, everything would be okay. There's a bit of a myth around that, I think. That they, do you agree?
Yeah.
That there's this, you know, that's the answer. Get them into rehab, that's the answer. And I learned that. And then I think it's still around.
Oh no, because I think there's the celebrity thing where they've gone into rehab and come out fine, and it's a myth.
Yeah.
And I always call like a rehab like an airbag.
Oh right,
in a car. Yeah. It's like when you crash,
that's
going to save you from, you know, death probably.
Sure, yeah.
But that's not the answer, because after you've crashed your car and the airbags come out, then you have to learn how to live.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I think it's, you know, rehabs are absolutely vital. But, you know, there are few places that you if you can't pay for them.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, one of the problems. But it is seen as the golden bullet. I that's what I've, you know, when I get them to rehab. And also the view that if you're an affected other, oh, you don't deserve help for yourself. You know, that a lot of people just don't realise that there isn't much support out there. Mm. But they just don't realise that it exists at all, or even, and that they're worthy of getting that support, that they need it too. They just don't see that often.
I would imagine if you're a partner or a parent, you're worn down so much by supporting someone.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't think, oh, you know. But I mean, that is the same for people caring for someone in any sort of condition, really. You know, that it's not recognised that those carers need help too, family members need help too.
Do you deal, in your experience, have you dealt mostly with parents of young people?
Oh, it depends. I mean, a lot of people we come across have got adult children that they're still supporting. I mean, I mentioned the person who talked about her daughter's alcohol problems and that she was paying out for the vodka. You know, her daughter's in her 30s, if not older, you know, so it's it's universal.
Yeah.
It just keeps going on and on. And a lot of people have got, who we work with and some volunteer with us and have done fantastic work for us. They are the adult children of usually of a parent with a, often an alcohol dependency. Yeah.
What's advice is good advice to give to a parent that is paying for their child's drugs, whatever age? Because it's hard to put boundaries, isn't it, from enabling them to carry on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because the fear would be if I don't, then they're going to either go out and I won't see them again.
Sure,
How do you deal with that?
Well, that is interesting you've raised that, because that is one of the areas that is dealt with on our AdFam at home one-to-one. I'm talking about the one-to-one hour-long sessions, and that is exactly one of the sessions that is focused on, are you enabling somebody to as you say, keep using, and how can you break through that barrier, how can you stop that, how can you set boundaries?
Yeah.
And so people are helped to set a boundary so they can say, almost sometimes it's tough love thing, you know, that to help people, because they you know, your natural reaction, someone you love, you want to help them, you want to do whatever, and you keep doing it because you think, well, they'll stop, or, you know, me helping will help, but in fact it doesn't. So to get to that point where it's okay to say, no, I'm not doing this anymore. That's what we try and help people to
Which is very difficult.
It's very difficult.
Because emotionally, when you see your child or parent in pain because they need something, and you want that pain to go away.
Of course, you do anything.
Yeah, exactly.
You do anything.
Yeah.
And the other thing I mentioned is we try and get people to understand that to be able to be strong and to be supportive. If you set boundaries, if you can deal with conflict, you're actually being supportive, but you need support for yourself.
Yeah.
You need that help yourself, or you're not going to be able to cope with it.
Yeah.
And that's what we try and put across.
It's really important because, again, it's hard to deal. Families are complicated anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well,
when
it's
you
great
add this
that
in,
you recognise that, because that's, you know, what we need to do, I think, as a, across all sectors, is to say, you know, people are affected by this issue and they need support in their own right.
I think it's quite difficult as well in like corporate environments, because everyone's just told to do what they're doing, get their head down, and stuff like that. But I feel in our school talks, our experience has been, funny enough, that the teachers are very grateful because they have had no experience in. So basically, we do an hour school talk, and we have people with lived experience that are now way out of addiction. That have had parents that have had problems as well. So we give like a 360 talk.
Oh, okay.
So we offer it up there. We're educating the children to look out for potential problems with themselves.
Yes.
But then we work in the car and give out the cards if their parents have issues.
Oh, right.
But it's incredible how many children come up to us and are like very grateful that they can talk about it for the first time, and they share.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking to hear.
Yeah. And, you know, that issue, if you're quite right to raise that, about disclosure is the first step, isn't it, towards getting some help. And we developed, we have developed it, but it's difficult to get it out there. Some webinars for schools for teachers, actually, you know, how do you deal with, not with what you say in the classroom, but how do you deal with children affected by parental substance use. If you come across that in the school, how can you deal with that? How can you help them? How can you refer them? What are you going to say? How do you, you know, as you say, once, if they disclose, what are you going to do next? You know, you've got
and
all this there.
What are you going to do next?
What are you
going to
do next?
And how do you, so do you still have the webinars on your website?
No, they have to be commissioned, if you like.
Right, okay, cool. We should talk about that then, because that could be a good
a good thing
for us, because it is difficult. We do get a lot of questions from teachers as well. Again, it's complicated, because it's a child that would come into school, if their parents have been drinking, if they're violent, or if they've come in and disrupt them, they're going to be tired, they can't focus.
Absolutely.
Full of fear.
Absolutely. That was one of the issues that we, I remember talking about that when I worked on the Hidden Harm Report with the Advisory Council for the Misuse of Drugs, that often school is a safe place, is the only safe place for some of these children, where they get a routine, they get a structure, as you say, but often, you know, they're not going to school for all the reasons that you've outlined. And when they're there, they're not functioning as well as they could, because they're, as you say, they're tired, and they probably might not have had anything for breakfast. You know, it's that sort of level of problem.
What is the Hidden Harm Report?
Right. Okay. So the Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs, which is the government's advisory body on drug issues, it was year 2000, I think, it began an inquiry into into children of drug-using parents, what was going on. So there was a big survey that was done. There was, you know, and I happened to be on that committee. And it was, I think it's still, and then we produced a report called Hidden Harm. And I think it was seminal, really. I think it highlighted for the first time the issues around parental drug use. It wasn't about that. It's very much about the illegal drugs, not alcohol. But, you know, a lot of the issues are the same. And, you know, there were recommendations, some of which have been taken on. I mean, the government of the time did accept the recommendations. But there's still a lot of work to do, I think, around referral and multi-agency working around children.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about the drug and alcohol treatment service. It's about social services, the early help, And that was one of the recommendations. But we also found then in the subsequent piece of work that we did that that multi-agency working wasn't working. And this is the NADFAM piece of work, not ACMD. Mm. And it would only kind of be joined up around the child if the social worker and the drug and alcohol worker happened to know each other. You know, it was that level
of... Yeah, because how do you sew that together? Because each person's coming from
that's
a different
right.
point of
and
view,
and that's
right?
still, I think that's still a challenge for a lot of local authorities.
Yeah.
And another recommendation was that let's get the parents into treatment. See, but one of the problems still come across, and I think this hasn't changed, is that so many women, mothers, they avoid treatment because they think the children will be taken away. And that is a real, real challenge.
And that's a really good point, actually.
Yeah. Yeah,
because even if they are heavily into alcoholism or addiction or whatever, then what would happen in that situation? Because that is a genuine
fear.
They probably
would be put into care, you see, and or go into kin care that we were talking about earlier. And that's why, you know, women don't want that to happen. And having said that, you know, there is an argument, and with a lot of evidence behind it, that just because you're using doesn't necessarily mean to say you're not a good mother. Yeah. So, you know, you have that. It's, you know, this assumption that if you're drug or alcohol dependent, that you're going to be, you're not going to be caring for the children. Well, yes, in some cases, of course, but not in every case. Mm. I think there has to be this issue is so nuanced, isn't it? It's so nuanced.
Because you can be an absolutely devoted, loving parent, but suffer from...
Yeah.
Alcoholism, and the moments would be if you get drunk or unconscious, then there's issues. But
indeed, it is so complex, and there's no one answer for all people. I think that's it. It has to be, you know, treatment support has to be tailored to the needs of the person, and you can't just say, okay, therefore, you know, go into treatment, do this, though, whatever. It's not a simple, it's a very, very complex issue.
I can see a documentary coming out.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm actually in one I'm going to see the screening soon about this subject. But I really feel that in the media, they jump up and down on like graphics of syringes and needles.
Oh,
and people with no teeth and someone who's really, really down that end. Yeah. And they don't focus on the housewife, the mother who's stressed at home and's probably drinking a couple of bottles of wine, or an executive who, you know, drinks a lot, or anywhere across the board.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important because it's very black and white. You either are or you aren't.
Yeah.
In the media, and there's this big avenue through.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and the prejudices that surround it need to be challenged, but. You know, at the moment, it's a very complex issue, and as I think we agreed earlier, so many other things. It's not singles. When trouble comes, not as single spies, but in battalions. And I think that's exactly the way it is with drug and alcohol use. Yeah.
If there's any children listening, what advice would you give them if they have a parent that's misusing?
Well, I mean, we have resources on our website. At the moment, we don't have any services that work directly with children. We do have an ADFAM at home service for the non-using parent.
Right.
Because I think, you know, for me, one of the... There's always this... The question, how do you achieve the best outcomes for children? Do you work with the children themselves or do you work with the parents? Probably a combination of the two. I mean, but you know, NACOA is a partner of ours, and you know, they offer the helpline. It's really tough, and again, I think we need a lot more, you know, recognition about the impact that substance use can have on children.
I've seen some remarkable stories where people have lost their kids, but but they've come back to them after a year when the person is a lot better. But also they've done work on themselves that understand that it's going to be difficult with the children, A, because they've been taken away, so really they've abandoned them in some way for the child.
They feel that,
B, they're going to be of different character.
Sure.
There's going to be remorse there. Yeah. There's going to be lots of stuff there. But I've seen families come back together and be incredibly successful, actually.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it, and we need to celebrate that, don't we?
Yeah.
We, you know, the recovery movement that I'm sure you know about is all about celebrating people's recovery and being, I don't know, okay, you know. And we should celebrate it.
Brilliant. Okay. Is there anything else you want to add on?
No, I think we've covered a wide range of issues. Yeah. Thank you. No, thank you very much. Yeah,
brilliant.
Thank you.
Vivian, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, it has for me. Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Powerful is brought to you by Stride Foundation, which educates children about addiction through school talks and provide some basic support for those struggling with addiction. To find out more what we do, please head over to www.stridefoundation.com. You can also donate. Please donate. It will help us to break the stigma of addiction. It will help us to educate more young people, and it will allow us to bring you more episodes. Thank you. See you next time.